Hey, this is Scott Kalam, founder of Leanderthal Distilling, and welcome to the first episode of the Leanderthal Podcast. This is the first in what I hope will be many podcasts about the liquor industry, about Leanderthal, about all kinds of things. Each episode, we're going to start with a segment that pulls the curtain back a little bit on one of our products and shows how we do things at Leanderthal. And in the process, we'll pull the curtain back on the liquor industry itself. There's a lot of dishonesty, deception, mythology, screwy laws, all kinds of things in this business that we're going to be exposing through this podcast. I take pride in being transparent about the liquor industry, how things are made, etc., and I think you should know the truth about what it is you're drinking. I also want to have some guests in from time to time. In fact, one of our upcoming episodes will be about the science of hangovers. I'm going to have one of my physician friends come in and talk about that. We're actually going to talk a little bit about hangovers today, too. And in addition to all of that, we'll take a look at some of the things going on in and around Leander, maybe an events calendar, maybe look at the local politics scene every once in a while. It's going to be fun. So let's get to the topic for this first podcast. You know, I delayed recording this for quite a while because I couldn't decide what I wanted to talk about first. I was almost ready to start talking about our product Texagave and the tequila industry generally, because there's a lot of interesting things about that. But a few things made me choose vodka for this first episode instead. First of all, Leanderthal vodka is our bestseller out in the retail marketplace, and for a lot of small distilleries, vodka is what pays the bills. When I first started producing vodka, I wondered how much room there was really in the market for more brands. But people do seem willing to try a new quality vodka at a reasonable price if you put it in front of them. And there's a lot of local appeal with our brand, obviously. So, second, in tastings, I always like to go in order of least flavor to most flavor, or in the case of vodka, no flavor to most flavor. If you start with Java Agave, for instance, our coffee liqueur, you're going to still be tasting that as you move through the other products. So, starting with the one that tastes least or not at all is the way to go. And third, Leanderthal was tagged in a post online a couple of weeks ago by someone who's a fan of our vodka. Had some great things to say about the product, and I was really grateful for that. And that's when I decided to cover vodka first. To really understand what vodka is, you have to understand how it's made. And that involves not just understanding a little bit about the chemistry of fermentation and distillation, but also federal law, believe it or not. Vodka, like every major classification of liquor, has a legal definition. So let's start with the law, because it defines what the end result of a product must be if you were going to label it vodka. So the Code of Federal Regulations has a specific chapter and section about vodka that says it must have no distinctive character, aroma, taste, or color. In other words, you're aiming for the blandest liquor possible. So how do we achieve that? Well, first, in order to label something vodka, regardless of what the source sugar is, it has to be distilled to 190 proof or higher. So that's 95% ethanol molecules at a minimum. Now, contrast that to bourbon, which by law cannot be distilled higher than 160 proof or 80% ethanol. By law, bourbon must have some flavor, even before barrel aging, that comes from the source sugar, which in the case of bourbon is going to be primarily corn. So let's back up a little bit before we even get into distillation. Distillation is really the second step of a two-step process. First, there's fermentation, and that's the same process used to create beer or wine. So first you're going to ferment your corn or cane sugar or wheat or potato or whatever your fermentable sugar is for your vodka, and that's going to yield an alcohol solution more similar to beer or barley wine, lower in alcohol concentration. Then you're going to put that relatively weak alcoholic solution into a still, heat it up until the alcohol turns into steam, capture that steam, and condense it back into a higher concentration of alcohol. Just like when you're cooking with wine, the alcohol boils out into a steam. Rather than letting that steam just dissipate into the air, a still captures that steam, cools and condenses it back into the higher, more concentrated alcohol solution. Do that a number of times, and eventually you're going to have a liquid that is 95% alcohol or higher, and you've got what you need to water down and call vodka. Now, also, just for understanding, you need to know that I tend to use the terms ethanol and alcohol interchangeably. And while all ethanol is always alcohol, and it's the beverage-grade stuff that gives us our buzz, All alcohols are not always ethanol. Some alcohol molecules of different types can be poisonous, but for purposes of most of the discussion today, I'll use those terms interchangeably to refer to the drinkable stuff. Now, once you've distilled something to 95% alcohol or higher, it has essentially lost all connection it ever had with the source sugar that you used in the fermentation stage. So when someone comes into the distillery and tells me they really prefer a potato vodka or a winter wheat vodka, etc., over corn, that's often my first clue that this person may not know as much about vodka as they think. Their favorite vodka may well be a potato or a wheat vodka, but the taste sensations and mouthfeel of that vodka for them, it's unlikely that those are related to the source sugar. An ethanol molecule from potato looks like an ethanol molecule from wheat or from cane or, in the case of Leanderthal, from corn. So while chemically speaking, all vodka is virtually the same, what is it that gives one vodka a different taste from another? From my perspective as a maker, there are three things. Now, before we get to that, one of the questions I got for today's podcast is how we can put our vodka out for such a low price. Everyone who tastes it knows the quality, and that doesn't seem to match up to the low price, right? Well, we're definitely trying to buy market share with our low price for the first few years. We're not going to jack it up sky high eventually or anything, but with costs increasing, it may have to go up a buck or two down the road, still totally affordable compared to most any other option on the shelf. I really like educated and sophisticated customers, so I'm going to let you guys in on a dirty little secret of the vodka industry that I have no problem making public for transparency's sake. Anyone who is putting out a bottle of vodka for less than $30 or maybe $40 is probably not doing the fermentation and distillation of that vodka themselves. They are buying pre-distilled ethanol from an industrial distiller, treating it, or not, and then proofing it down with water and bottling it. This is exactly what we do to create our vodka at Leanderthal. As a maker, I actually view the distillation in some ways as the least important part of the vodka making process. I could certainly distill vodka myself. I mean, I always joke I could teach a capuchin monkey or a reasonably smart dog how to distill vodka. You just keep distilling and redistilling until you reach 190 proof or higher, and that or higher part is key. So, on to the three things that set one vodka apart from another. First, there's the proof at distillation. Now remember I said that ethanol must be distilled to a minimum of 190 proof before it can be labeled vodka, but it can be distilled higher than that. Rather than Leanderthal doing fermentations of corn mash, having to find a way to dispose of that mash after fermentation is done, make the upfront investment in that fermentation equipment, etc., instead of doing all that, we contract with an industrial distiller whose equipment is able to provide us with ethanol derived from corn that is 192 proof. It's much more cost-effective for us to do that, and it allows us to put a superior product on the market for a lower price. I always say that vodka does not have to be expensive to taste expensive, and I believe that's true. And the higher you can get the proof of the distillate, the more pure it is, really. The more completely ethanol it is, and the fewer off aromas and off flavors it will have fresh off the still. So there's number one on our list of things that can make a vodka taste different from others. Proof at distillation, the higher the better. Number two of the three things that sets one vodka apart from another. Treatment of the ethanol after distillation. That's normally filtration through activated carbon, essentially charcoal filtering like you might do with your Brita or inline filter at home with water. At a microscopic level, tiny pores in the carbon trap compounds that can contribute to off flavors and aromas that shouldn't be there. So the more carbon filtration used, the better. And we use a lot of activated carbon for filtration because I think this is maybe the most important part of the vodka making process. If you were ever a fan of the old show on, I forget what cable station it was on, of Mythbusters, they did an entire segment on vodka, an entire episode on vodka. And they had a guy come in from some distilled spirits association, and the challenge was to see if he could detect the difference between top shelf vodka and bottom shelf vodka, depending on the number of times the vodka had been run through a filter. They took a lower shelf vodka and they put it through some activated carbon. And then they took a section of that vodka and they put it through carbon twice. and then a section of that, they put it through three times and four times, all the way, I think, through seven different filtration steps. And the guy they had on was able to rank order in terms of how many number of times each vodka had been run through that carbon, from bottom shelf all the way to top shelf. So just know when you're buying a bottle of Leanderthal vodka, there's been no penny pinching when it comes to activated carbon that it's been filtered through. So number three of the three things that set one vodka apart from another, and this is a big one, water. When you put a shot of vodka into a glass, what you put in the glass is 60% water. Now, some distillers may use deionized or distilled water, which I think can have kind of a flat mouthfeel. There's no liveliness to it. It doesn't taste very good or oxygenated. We have our own reverse osmosis purification system in-house that creates bottled water quality water with just enough minerality left to it to have a little more clean, crisp, and familiar drinking water finish to it. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of Leanderthal vodka. So there you have it, the three things that set one vodka apart from another, in my view. If you want to listen to another great podcast that pulls the curtain back on the vodka industry specifically, check out Planet Money's vodka episode. It's an NPR podcast. They did a really nice job with it a while back, and they go into some history of some specific brands that I won't do here because I always want to avoid the perception that I'm disparaging any other products or not being fair to them or something. So at this point, I'm going to read and answer some of the good questions Leanderthal customers sent us prior to recording the podcast. Does, insert company here, distill their own vodka or are they just bottling it? My answer to that, whatever company you want to ask me about, is I'm not 100% sure, and you should always really ask them. But I'm going to give you some tips on reading labels that can help you decode what's going on with almost any distilled spirit product. There are three ways that a manufacturer indicates their level of involvement in the production of a particular product. You'll look on the bottle and you'll normally see on the bottom of the front label, it will say distilled by, produced by, or bottled by. Those are essentially the only three options. Now, if it says distilled by, that means the company either did all of the fermentation themselves and then put that fermented liquid into the still and distilled it themselves. Okay. It can also mean that they bought industrially distilled ethanol and then put it into their still and ran it through one more time. That's kind of a easy shortcut to be able to put distilled by on your bottle. Now, produced by, you're going to see that on a lot of liqueurs where, you know, you're adding various ingredients, blending, flavoring agents and various sugars and whatnot. So you're literally producing those things. When it comes to vodka, if you see produced by on a label, that means that the vodka maker had run the vodka through activated charcoal or carbon. I'm using those interchangeably too. They've run their vodka through activated charcoal at a rate of not less than, I think, 1 ounce per 100 gallons of the distilled spirit. If you do that, you can say produced by on your label. If you see bottled by on a label, that means they either bought finished vodka at its final proof and just bought it bulk and then put it into their bottle and labeled it, or they bought bulk ethanol, watered it down without treating it, and put it into their bottle. So those are your three options on the label to read. Okay, next question. We got some good ones here from Facebook and a few from email. What's with the number of times distilled? Okay, there's a little bit of there's a lot of marketing hype around the number of times distilled. There really is no magic number that makes one vodka better than the other. And remember, the whole goal with vodka is to get the initial distillate up to at least 190 proof or higher. And if you do that, you've got the precursor to vodka. So distilling it again may get you up to 191 proof. Distilling it again may get you up to 192 proof. At some point, you're going to get to the point where your equipment is not able to separate the alcohol from anything else that's in there any further. and you're going to just plateau. You can distill 12 more times after that and put it on your label, and it's not doing a thing to improve the quality of the product. So the number of times distilled, people kind of want to see it. It is on our label, industrial distiller that we distill it from. It's interesting. They don't really use a pot still where you can technically accurately count the number of times it's been distilled. It's a much more complicated process to get it up to 192 proof. But the end result is that it is effectively distilled 6 times. So don't be too judgy of any particular vodka by the number of times it was distilled. Next question. What accounts for the different mouthfeel of various vodkas? Some feel oily, etc. Now, this is an interesting question, and I think we've really kind of covered it when we talked about the three things that set one vodka apart from another. The proof at distillation, higher is better. The amount of activated carbon used in the filtration, more is better. And the quality of the water. Each of those things is going to contribute to the mouthfeel of the vodka. In some ways, the water used might have the most effect on the overall mouthfeel. And certainly the carbon filtration is going to have an effect on the oiliness. You know, this question, he says some vodkas feel oily. And that's interesting because there are some compounds that come out late in a distillation run, when the temperature of the liquid in the still starts to get to a certain point, compounds that are called fusel oils. And I suppose those could contribute to sort of an oily mouthfeel, although my experience with an oily feel comes a lot of times from gin. Some of the essential oils that may be absorbed in the distillation of gin from the botanicals in the column can, to me, sometimes take on a little bit of an oily feel. But anyway, great question. Hope we covered that. Next question is one we get a lot, and that is Leanderthal vodka gluten-free? Yes, it is. It is gluten-free. It's distilled from corn. Corn never had any gluten in it to begin with, so no worries for anybody with celiac disease regarding gluten content. I had read long ago on the Celiac Disease Association of America's website that even they say that it's unlikely that any fragment of the protein that causes problems for people, it's unlikely that any fragment is going to make it over the still after fermentation and distillation in a way that would cause you a problem. But to be safe, definitely choose a gluten-free vodka. So Leanderthal is definitely gluten-free. Next question. Are you going to do flavored vodkas? No, we're not. We're going to just do our one plain vodka correctly. My advice for anybody who likes flavored vodkas, get a good quality vodka like Leanderthal and flavor it at home. Have some fun with it. You can muddle any kind of fruit that you want in the vodka. You can add some sugar to it. You can put some vanilla beans into the vodka itself and vanilla flavor it. The web has no shortage on recipes and techniques that you can use to really engage in some fun mixology at home using a good plain vodka to start with. Should I keep my vodka in the freezer? If you have room, I guess it's okay. I would always recommend that you rock the bottle gently after you pull it out of the freezer, just in case your freezer has frozen any of the water in the solution before the alcohol. You know, people forget, that vodka is it's a solution of 60% water and 40% ethanol. It has a freezing point, and it's somewhere around 12, 13, 15 degrees below zero. I had a guy write me years ago with kind of an angry tone in his email and a photograph of a bottle of our vodka frozen solid. And he said, "Does your vodka freeze? I've been buying vodka for 20 years, putting it in my freezer, and I've never had this happen." Well, I freaked out thinking that we had accidentally maybe put a bottle of water when we were testing the filler or something, and a bottle of water got mixed into the vodka somehow. But then I noticed it looked like he was sending the email from a commercial grade kitchen of some sort. And commercial grade freezers will get down so low that they will freeze a bottle of vodka solid. So don't put it in one of those freezers unless you want your bottle to break and maybe have to wait a while before you pour any vodka. The next question is, your vodka doesn't seem to give me a hangover. How do you prevent that? You know, one of my pet peeves in the liquor industry is when I hear the owner of a brand claim that their vodka or whatever liquor they produce won't give you a hangover. It's irresponsible, and scientifically, it's a lie. Don't get me wrong, I love this comment, but not because I think it's true. I love it because it indicates someone who might just be a responsible consumer. Every liquor brand on the planet will give you a hangover if you consume too much of it, and you will never hear me make a claim to the contrary, nor will you hear me humor anyone else making that claim. Alcohol's dehydrating effects and stress on the body are a constant. Now, some liquors that may not be as thoroughly and carefully distilled as vodka might contain some compounds that exacerbate the severity of a hangover. Scientifically speaking, you may be less likely to get a severe hangover from the cheapest vodka than you are the finest and most expensive bourbon or rum. That may seem counterintuitive, but remember that vodka contains basically just ethanol and water. Other liquors come off the still at a lower proof, so they contain not only alcohol, but also some compounds called cogeners that contribute to flavor and that scientists suspect also might contribute to the severity of a hangover. You can Google any number of articles and studies on that and how consuming alcohol with large amounts of sugar can intensify hangover effects. A physician friend of mine who is pretty much anti-drinking is going to come on, and we're going to talk about the science of hangovers in a future episode. What exactly causes them and what steps you can take to avoid them or decrease their severity. Of course, the best way to avoid a hangover is to drink in great moderation or not at all. So that's it. That's the first episode of the Leanderthal podcast, folks. I do want to give a shout out to everyone who recently threw their hat into the ring for the upcoming Leander City Council and mayoral election. Those are unpaid volunteer positions that take a lot of time to do them right anyway. And I have no doubt that everyone vying for a seat believes that they have the best interest of our fast-growing city at heart. I have my own favorites, and I might even make some endorsements down the road, but for now, it's just enough to say thank you to all of them. We'll see you soon with the next episode. In the meantime, please come by the Leanderthal Lounge on Friday or Saturday night and join us for a cocktail. Many of you know we were awarded Best Margarita in the region by the Hill Country News Readers Poll using our Tex Agave product. The lounge is open Fridays 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Saturdays 4 to 9. Contrary to Governor Abbott's recent lifting of COVID restrictions, I want to remind everybody we are still operating at a 50% capacity. We do require masks while you're not seated and drinking. If you try to take a drink while wearing a mask, we will cut you off. We've got outdoor seating as well and a nice fireplace on the patio. We also do bottle sales during those hours, and also Monday through Friday, noon to 5. Please check our website for the most recent hours. We'll likely have some changes to those coming up soon. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you at the lounge or in the next podcast. Thanks.